session number 23370, reel 9.
This is the fifth reel of a taped interview with Peter Gray in his home in Perth, Western Australia, on the 2nd of 4th, 2002, for the Imperial War Museum in London, and the interviewer is John Bannister. Could you give us an idea of the average day that you were to spend in bicycle camp? When it would start, what you would do, and when it would finish?
Well, it was generally more or less just after daybreak when you were roused out, and it was a case of there'd be some breakfast, which was generally just rice anyway, and if you were going to work, you were summoned very quickly to was your turn to go to work. You had to be out there ready to go, generally equipped with a water bottle of some sort. A hat, if you had one, was imperative, plus clothes. Well, the clothes we had were mainly clothes that had been given to us by the Japs, but they were made for native population, so consequently they were pretty tight fit, most of them. In a lot of cases, of course, they were had to be let out or do something with them just to be able to put the darn things on. But of course, some sort of clothing was pretty necessary. Then you were put on a truck and went to wherever, whether you were going out to the golf course to do work out there, or you're going to one of the stores to work there, which was any sort of work that they were involved with, or down to Tanjong Priok or to any of the oil depots, because there was an enormous amount of work there to be done cleaning up. And the Japs had no idea of using equipment, machinery, etc., to do cleaning up, such as using a tractor of any sort to push, pull, or anything. It was all done by hand. There were such things as drums of spirit, pure alcohol spirit. They were 120 gallon drums, and they were enormous damn things to shift around. At that time also, we were starting to feel the effects of the tropical climate, and tinea was a big problem, not only on your feet, but more in your genital area, and became very serious, because his scrotum penis was very much infected with this tinea, and one of the ways to combat it, which we found, was to use some of this alcohol spirit and dab it on. And of course it burnt like glory. It was bloody painful, but it was better to do this than what it was to suffer the thing. But just an insight onto the Jap mentality a bit was that yes, they'd allow you to put this stuff on, or to get it put on, so long as you put on a show with it. Well, there was no difficulty with exposing all your genitals, having this stuff dabbed on, and it burnt. It burnt like fury. So of course, you just to keep the peace, you dance around a bit and shout and yell. And but you got the treatment, and that was quite a thing. But never mind. Rolling those 120 gallon drums around was quite heavy work, and of course some of the more adventurous spirits tried their hand at drinking some of it, and of course it was too potent. That was deadly. Some of the blokes would drink anything, but yes, and there was some went back to the hospital area in water bottles, fill up a water bottle with it, take it back to the hospital where they use it for their compiling medicines and treatments, etc. They were very glad of it. But yes, it, if you weren't working, then generally there was things that were needed doing around the place, your own personal washing and that sort of thing. And of course there were jobs put up by the administration that you had to do, keep this place clean, that place clean, that sort of thing. But the bathing was quite a thing there, because the bathhouse was a consisted of a big concrete tank. And it had a grill of bars over the top, so you couldn't get into it, but you dip water out of the tank, and it was always warm to hot. It was like an artesian water. It was always warm to hot, and of course you dip the water out and just poured it over yourself, and do all your ablutions, etc. And there was always plenty of water, so there was no problem. And that was one of the reasons that bicycle camp was relatively good, is that there was plenty of water to at least have a shower or have a wash with. So you didn't have those sorts of problems occurring when you don't have water. But the amount of work, yes, it was never ending. It never stopped. Lots of it. You seemed to be out every day. You didn't get much rest, as far as that was concerned. But there was an occasion there which mystified us a bit for a start. But when the midget submarines got into Sydney and did their damage there, and of course one of these things was salvaged, and the bodies were taken out of the submarine, they were cremated, and the ashes were sent back to Japan. And the well, they were sent to Switzerland via the Red Cross and went back to Japan, and that was regarded as a rather wonderful act by the Japanese. We finished up with a packet of cigarettes each out of that. They're only pretty poor old cigarettes, I might tell you. They were Indian cigarettes. The brand was a V for Victory brand of cigarettes, but at least it showed that there was some feeling with these characters. But that was just after, as I remember it, after we'd had the problem with having to sign this non-escape agreement.
The fact that they were able to come up with cigarettes for you, did it give you any indication of what they might have been holding back in regard?
Oh, yes, yeah. We were, of course, And the first thing they said when they were given to you, well, you know, why can't they do it all the bloody time, you know?
Well,
you know, what else are they holding back that maybe we should be getting? Because we were, at that time, starting to wonder where the hell the Red Cross was. Because that's normally one of the first things that you start to get is a Red Cross parcel. But they were years away at that time.
The keeping of spirits also incorporated, as I understand, the keeping of order amongst yourselves, and your officers were obviously pushing that side as well. Can you tell us what that included?
Well, they, morale was kept up to a great degree by officers who weren't required. They weren't required to work, but they came out with the working parties the whole time. So there's always one of our own officers, at least, with each group of people, so that you always had a responsible person there, or person responsible for all the troops. They were very good, because they very quickly learned to take the eye of the Jap guard and to not entertain him, but to keep him occupied to some extent, as much as possible away from where you were working, so that and that was a quite a big thing as far as we were concerned, we the being the workers. And the officers also gained a lot of knowledge of how to do this, and because it was a very worthwhile sort of operation. But yes, they the discipline, of course, was maintained right throughout. You were still in the army or the navy, and you still had to. You were still bound by all the orders, etc., from these people, and that was it. You had to abide by the KR and AI, as it was known in those days. And yes, discipline, everything was still there, even under the fact that you were a prisoner. So it was never discipline never lapsed or lacked or that sort of thing. Entertainment was also looked after to a great degree by the fact that there was quite a lot of talent in amongst a bundle of troops like that, and it became quite a thing, quite a memorable one was in bicycle camp. There was an area that had been set aside as a theatre, but it had the walls knocked out, and for some reason or other, there was just merely a roof over the top and a concrete floor with a few bits and pieces that you could sit on here and there. And a concert party was put on, and there were quite a few things that were done. Plays such as The Monkey's Paw, and those sorts of things. That still haunts me, that damn thing. But
tell us a little bit about that. I'm not sure that I know that one.
Oh, the story of it was this: these parents, the young bloke, one of their sons. It was a bit of a tear away, and he'd been away on a motorbike, and he'd been killed, and he was buried, and the old man amongst all these things had a monkey's paw, And this monkey's paw was alleged to have been had magic powers, so she could grant one wish, one of those style of things. And of course, after the mother was very distraught about the whole thing, and eventually she finished up with the monkey's paw and said, "I wish he was back." And of course, you don't see him, of course. She opens the door and she screams and faints, and that's it, that's the whole thing wipes out. But of course your imagination runs wild with that sort of thing. But
the mother presumably wasn't a mother at all.
Oh no, no. Everybody was. There was only prisoners involved in it.
But she would have been a he.
Oh yes, yes, yes. Yeah, yeah. Oh, we had some quite good talent. There was a one of the blokes used to take off Carmen Miranda, of all things, and Carmen Miranda, of course, was South American, and she was into the tango and all the that sort of thing. And this bloke used to dress up, and he's a very dark-looking bloke, and he used to powder his face up and put lipstick on and that sort of thing. And he had quite a good voice, and he could take off this Carmen Miranda. And he used to get up there with his skirts and twirl them and twist them, and he was quite magic. And of course he used to get all the shouts and yells and whistles and this sort of thing. But also in this particular concert, I don't know whether you would remember, but at one time in all the theatres, all the picture theatres, when it came to interval time, they used to put on an ad for caps and cigarettes. And the ad used to come on with intermission. Time for a capstan, because that was their sayings was it's time for a capstan. And came the intermission time at this theatre. Mind you, all there was just a stage with a bit of a roof over it, and all this higgledy piggledy behind with a few columns here holding up a roof over nothing except for a concrete floor. And a few bits and pieces, and the electrician had got to work with some of these others, and we had power in the camp, of course, and on came this light, and in the light up there was intermission. When in a fog, light up a wog. Now a wog at that time was a wog cigarette. So, you know, this thing was put up there, and it was so well done, and with such effect, it was just absolutely marvellous. But it showed the ingenuity and the capability of people to be able to do this sort of thing and take it off. I'll never forget that damn thing. Went in a fog, light up a log.
How do the Japanese take the performances?
Oh, they'd come and watch. What they were looking for, or whether it was just curiosity or that sort of thing. But there would always be one or two of them hanging around, and the guard would come and have a look, and sometimes they could pick up something, or particularly with the music, they used to pick that up. Although their style of music was a bit different to ours, but a lot of the other stuff, of course, they'd just stand there for a while and they'd wander off. But, none of it used to interfere. Some of them later on, when we were up in Burma, they got a bit close to the bone, but that's another story. But life was still going on you were still getting nowhere, and there were rumours around that this had happened, that had happened. We were still getting a bit of information. It was alleged that we had radios in the camp and that sort of thing, but I'm not sure that they were there, or whether it was just outside information used to come in, because there were some fairly high Dutch officers in a section of the camp, and but they were kept separate from us, they were barbed right off. But there was some communication from outside to them, and consequently from them through to us. But it was something was a bit, you know, it was all, a lot of it was fairly not fancy, but it was nothing you could verify. You couldn't listen on the radio yourself and say that had happened. But yes, there were some signs that things perhaps were evening up to some extent, but it was still a case of work every day and that sort of thing. You didn't have much option on it.
The sort of situation in regard to the black market, was that something that was able to take place much at the basket camp?
Yes, there was quite a good black market there. The Americans came into the camp. That was the, I think it was 152nd Artillery or something like that. It was a big artillery unit, and they came into the camp, and they came in and they had all their equipment, all their clothes, all their equipment. They came into the camp, and they also had a lot of money. At that time, we were, there was allowed into the camp a sort of a canteen service. If you could afford to buy food or fancy stuff or that sort of thing, well, fine, you could buy it. What we found was a good thing, was to save up your 10 cents that you were getting each day, and when this service came round, buy some cookies. And the Yanks were suckers for cookies. And of course, what you bought for a dollar, you'd sell to them for 10, you know, this sort of thing. It was pretty murderous, but they had the money, they were very open-handed with it, and we were quite accepting of it.
I understand cigarettes were worth quite a bit too.
Oh, yes.
What could you buy with a cigarette?
I never had any cigarettes as such, because we used to buy tobacco or cigars and cut them up and use that for our pastime or smoking. But there were cigarettes available, but what their actual value was, I never worried too much, because we were into the other bit of it.
In the middle of 42, the Burma Railway was to be started. Had you heard anything about anything like that at all?
No, we didn't hear anything about it, not at that time. There were rumours starting to get around then that we were going to be shipped out of Java. Where to, we didn't know. All we got was just this idea that we were going to be shipped somewhere. We weren't quite sure where, but it was to be soon. Of course, that's always the case, you know, that, there's never any definite date. But suddenly in, what, towards September, it started, and there was the first group went off that was called the, I think, the Java 3A party. And then we were the next ones. And we were the Java 5A party, and we went up to Singapore, and apparently in the knowledge of what happened was that they weren't quite ready for us up in Burma. So we had a 3 month occupation in what was known as the Selarang Barracks. And from there we were still occupied in the same sort of thing. You were taken out to work, and you had to work no matter what. But there was a lot of different work there, such as cutting down rubber trees and sort of thing that was highly against the grain as far as the local population was concerned, because rubber was quite a big part of their production, their living.
What was the condition on your arrival at Selarang? How were you, and how was everyone else at that point?
We had been living relatively well, when I put that in inverted commas, because it enabled us to sort of recover from some of our problems and wounds, and get away from some of the diseases. We were relatively healthy when we left bicycle camp. We were in reasonably good condition. And the people in Selarang, they were still in very good condition. They were living quite well, except for the fact that, of course, they were living on rice, which is not the same as living on meat and vegetables. But the the first thing that I did when we got to Selarang, of course, was go and try and find my brother, because he was a prisoner in the second, or with the second fourth. And but the day before we got there, he'd been on a ship that sailed for Korea, so I didn't catch up with him then. But when I found out that he'd gone, of course, that was quite a blow as far as I was concerned, because I'd been looking forward to catching up with him, but at least I knew he was still alive, and that was a big thing.
Had you been able to get any word or contact relatives at home?
Not at that point, no, nothing. We never sent any information back, or never had any of the ability to send any of those things until what, mid 1943. That was about the first opportunity we had to send anything home. That was one of the big disappointments, of course, that you didn't know what was going on apart from what was going on around you, and you couldn't tell anybody, so you were stuck in this that sort of situation.